Good morning, everybody. My name is Anwar Naseem. I'm in the Department of Natural Resources on the Mac campus. So today, our first session, our first actual panel session, is titled "Feeding the Challenge of Feeding 9 Billion People." And the reference to 9 billion is obviously to the population that is going to grow, the global population that is expected to grow up to 9 billion by mid-century. So the issue is, well, how are we going to feed everybody by then? And we're obviously having problems feeding everybody today, so what are the challenges? And basically, when you think about food security, there are two elements to it. There's the physical availability of it. So, you know, we need to get our supply in, as Dr. Pingali just mentioned. So we have to invest in R&D and productivity to get supply up. But there's also the accessibility issue in terms of getting incomes up and having people afford food. So that's what this session is a bit about, and we're going to be hearing from three great speakers on these issues. And the first one is Dr. Marco Ferroni. And I know we're sort of running out of time, so I'm going to be a little brief with my introduction. Dr. Ferroni is the executive director of Syngenta Foundation for Sustainable Agriculture. He's an expert in international agriculture and sustainability issues. Previously, he worked at the Inter-American Development Bank and the World Bank in Washington, and as a deputy manager of Sustainable Development Department in IDB, he had the responsibility for regional sector policy and technical support to the bank's countries departments, as the principal officer in the World Bank's Office of Evaluation and Oversight. He directed evaluation studies that assess the relevance, performance, and results of bank strategies and investments. As a senior advisor to the World Bank, he advised on donor relations and directed work on international public goods and their role in foreign aid and international affairs. And early on in his career, he was an economist and division chief of international economic relations in the government of Switzerland. And he holds a doctoral degree in agriculture economics from Cornell University. And Dr. Ferroni is going to be hopefully on time because he has a flight to catch right after. So I'm sure, you know, you can come up. Yeah, thanks.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman, and good morning, everybody. It's a pleasure to be here. Again, I've had the pleasure to address this crowd on a number of previous occasions. And those of you who may have been here on previous occasions know that I have a number of PowerPoints on record in McGill Reservoirs somewhere, and so I decided this time not to bring a PowerPoint, just some talking points. And since I'm slated to be the first speaker in a panel that is entitled Feeding 9 Billion People, I thought that I would start off somewhere at some general level just a little bit and then focus in on some aspects that I really care about a lot that our foundation is actively engaged in terms of linking smallholder farmers to markets, because to me, markets, productivity, we've heard it in the previous speech, and smallholders, of course, is the name of the game when we're talking about generating food security and bringing up the production in terms of food commodities, in terms of the basic three Fs of agriculture. I'm not mentioning the four F, which would be fuels. The three Fs are food, fiber, and feed. Now, it's always good to start by debunking a myth. And there is a myth out there in the form of a certain literature by what I call the food doomsayers and the pessimists in the Malthusian tradition. That literature flares up whenever prices go up. There's a new book or two coming out. And the observers that generate that literature will tell you that it is not possible to feed 9 billion people. The resources are simply not there. And they'll say this in part because of the dietary transition towards more livestock-based foods that we have discussed in this venue in the past. My view is that the doomsayers and the pessimists have been wrong in the past and will be wrong in the future again, if and as long as the global community gets its act together, supporting farmers and farming with sensible policies, judicious investments, market-led approaches, good management, and above all, an open mind when it comes to technology and innovation. The world has risen to the challenge of filling food supply gaps before. I see, therefore, no reason why human ingenuity cannot accomplish the feat again and again, even if the task is objectively getting more complex because of deteriorating natural resource conditions and the specter of climate change. The challenges that we need to address are formidable. We have heard a good summary of them in Prabhu's remarks. They are formidable, to be sure, but so are the opportunities that present themselves, as I will try to explain. The challenges and the task in the realm of production, and I'm only in my talk, I'm going to limit myself to the aspect of availability in the definition of food security, in other words, production and supply. The challenges in the realm of production are essentially all about cutting wastefulness and inefficiency in agriculture. Because getting a ton of grain from a hectare of land from which you could get five simply amounts to waste. It is wastes water and land, and the task, therefore, is to close yield gaps, to raise productivity, and also to make farming more resilient to shocks of various kinds. I don't have time to get into that, but that's an important aspect in addition to the imperative of raising productivity. Can this be done, raising productivity in this sense, closing yield gaps? The answer is a resounding yes. There is vast, untapped production potential in African and South Asian agriculture, to mention just the two geographies that are sometimes viewed as problematic in this very respect. Yield gaps could be progressively and sustainably closed, production could be increased, and natural resources used wisely with the right technologies, incentives, and forms of support for farmers. As to the approach to be taken, growing more from less seems to me the maxim to go by. Sustainable intensification is the concept to embrace. Productivity and sustainability are not at odds with each other in agriculture. They are actually two sides of the same coin. There cannot be sustainability in agriculture without much, much higher levels of resource use efficiency and thus productivity, whether those resources may be fertilizer, whether they be agrochemicals, whether they be people, not to mention water and land and biodiversity. Nor, by the way, can there be sustainability without farmers making a decent living and ultimately having the ability to choose between productive on-farm and off-farm work? In this context, I would like to propose to you a new definition of food security. I know the textbook definition, all of you know it, we can recite it as needed. But to me, really, if we're looking at it in terms of farmer income and farmer choice, a good definition of food security would be a population adequately fed by farmers who are there voluntarily by choice as opposed to by default because they have no other alternative where to work. This aspect of farmer livelihood, welfare, and income brings me to the matter of the opportunities out there. There's something happening that's very important and that is historically new, and it is what I'm calling the economic growth dividend for farmers and farming, which has been at work for some time in emerging markets and important parts of the developing world. It's an economic growth, it's a dividend that comes from economic growth that bodes well and spells favorably for agriculture's prospects that will remain active for many years to come, because sustained economic growth coupled with urbanization leads to rapid growth in the demand for food. And it does so during the long early stages of the process. We're talking about decades. Agricultural markets are expanding as a result, offering opportunities for farmers, including smallholder farmers, to take advantage of with the right organization and support. To illustrate this, look at Africa, with its admittedly uneven, so far, record of being able to feed its people, including farmers themselves. A decade of impressive economic growth up until now, started in about the year 2000, has fostered change and has really led in many settings and in many countries to a shift in expectations that bodes well for an agricultural transformation that could lift productivity, rural incomes, and livelihoods in new ways in Africa. The burden of poverty, disease, and malnutrition has, of course, not disappeared. But the prospects for agriculture, rural development, and food security have improved with greater government commitment to agriculture, for example, under NEPAD programs. Also, they have improved because of expanding markets, rising commodity prices, and something that is very important in Africa, if you take a long view over the last 25 or 30 years analyzing agricultural incentives on the continent, reduced agricultural taxation relative to the past. What do farmers want and need in this context? And I may have said this to you before in this venue. They want three things everywhere, whether women or men, whether large or small, and irrespective of where they're housed and where they're operating and farming on the face of the earth. Those three things are technology, services, and access to markets. Delivered en masse for transformational impact. Delivery en masse is not possible by the route of development projects. Market-based approaches are needed, nurtured by government and the non-profit sector as needed, to bring, say, seed industries to life, create the conditions for agri-service companies to arise, catalyze smallholder agricultural finance, offer crop and livestock insurance as we do at the Syngenta Foundation in cooperation with our partners, and bring in buyers on the output side of the equation. I can tell you that the farm population is keen on all of this. They want resources and tools to work with. They don't want charity, they don't want Millennium Development Goals, and they also don't want international public goods. They want to generate marketable surplus and be commercial. Nobody has ever been a subsistence farmer voluntarily. They know that to adopt technological change, which implies the use of purchased inputs, they need links to markets. They need to be able to sell something on the output side. Opportunity is staring us in the face, it seems to me, in a situation where markets expand. An African food processor's constant and recurring complaint is that they cannot source enough raw material locally. The question then is how to organize farmers for different value chains. Cooperation, say through producer organizations, is essential, but cooperatives can be difficult to manage and to maintain. Silver bullets do not exist. That is my main conclusion on this matter. Tailor-made local solutions offer the only hope, but again, organization of farmers is one of the keys. Business and financial models that work in practice are also essential, whether you operate as a non-profit or as a for-profit commercial entity. You need clarity regarding your revenue model and how you're going to pay for capital costs, soil and soil management expenditure, production inputs, agricultural extension, post-harvest handling, and marketing expenditure. Only when you have this figured out can you look for the right kind of finance, the funding along the spectrum from donors to impact investors to commercial money. The investor community with an interest in agriculture, including African agriculture, and it is not small, tells me that there is much more investable money out there than business plans they find attractive to fund. This too, therefore, sounds like an opportunity to me. To rise to it, we must perhaps do less analysis, including less economic analysis, and I'm trained as an ag economist, and get practical. View agricultural intensification as the management task that it is, and adopt a commercial orientation. The scarcity of convincing commercial business plans out there in what is a sea, after all, of development projects and initiatives should really make us stop and think. Now, there are a number of new initiatives. There is a lot of budding new thinking coming along precisely in this area. Perhaps we can get to some of that during the discussion. I think that I'm supposed to be ending my intervention, and this is what I will do. Thank you very much.
So the normal way we do things is have all the speakers speak first and have a panel session at the end and have some questions at the end. But because Dr. Ferroni has to leave at 10:30, what I've asked him to do is if anybody has a question for him right now, please come up to the, one of the two microphones and just ask. I can only take one or two, so if you have any questions for Dr. Ferroni, please. Yes, please go ahead. Oh, okay.
Yes, thank you for your presentation. Is this on? In our introductory presentation and your presentation, we heard many important indicators of what farmers would like in terms of improving productivity and their own livelihood systems. Technology, services, access to markets. There was one fundamental area I would suggest was lacking in both presentations. And what farmers most want is the fundamental control of their asset land. And in the absence of security of tenure, all evidence going back to many FAO conferences, the EFAD conference in 1995, on combating hunger and poverty indicated that the evidence is increasingly clear that with access to technology, services, and markets, smallholder farmers, when their productivity does increase, are often forcibly evicted from their land, and these benefits are captured by elites. But there seems to be, by not having it raised by two leading speakers, yourself and the former, of the fundamental need to address this difficult political issue of who has the rights to use what land for what purposes is fundamental and a fundamental foundation upon which productivity increases will or will not be realized. I'd appreciate a comment on this.
Thank you. Could you also identify yourself and your organization?
Bruce Moore, the president of the Institute for Active Citizenship and formerly the founding director of the International Land Coalition, an alliance of the multilateral system and civil society working on the issue that I've just raised in my question.
Okay. Can we take another question? Mm-hmm. It will take one more question. I'm sorry, because we're really running out of time. We'll go.
Hello, Felix von Geyer. I'm a sustainable development journalist. Just very quickly, how much GMO would actually be involved in your productivity improvements? I know that if you go to much of Africa, Syngenta is very synonymous with trying to kind of get the seeds and get the patents on a lot of these, so people tend to hide them in like old lady sheds in the villages. So just wondering, how do you actually kind of get a more sort of equitable and organic kind of productivity yield?
Okay, please go ahead.
Thank you very much for those two questions. Let me take the second one first. So in what our foundation does, there is, and you can go to our website, syngentafoundation.org, there's actually nothing happening with GM technology. Having said this, I would never abdicate or reject GM technology. I think that GM technology is not the answer to food security out there for once and for all, but it is one of the tools in the arsenal of technological tools that I would not dismiss. And it can play some very important roles in area where breeding technology currently is not able to develop the solutions that the very farmers need that we are all talking about. Now, you mentioned organic agriculture. I mentioned sustainability. I think that organic agriculture can actually sometimes be quite unsustainable. And I think that conventional agriculture, depending on how it's practiced, can also be sustainable. So I think that the issue that we should focus on is not religious wars with respect to organic versus conventional or what have you in between, but focusing on sustainability. And sustainability clearly requires in African settings, for example, synthetic fertilizer. I'm mentioning synthetic fertilizer because organic production supposedly does not accept synthetic fertilizer. But if you've got soil health problems, major soil nutrient depletion problems, and you don't have the biomass for a number of reasons that I'm not going to go into because of lack of time, that could be an alternative to synthetic fertilizer. You need synthetic fertilizer or else basically you're condemning farmers to continued low productivity and the poverty that goes along with it. And similar comments could apply to agrochemicals and so on. So in conclusion, I would suggest to us that what we ought to look at is sustainability, and can we, increase productivity in sustainable ways. Now, with respect to the topic on property rights and security of tenure, I would like to thank the gentleman for this extremely important point. I think that is exactly true. However, where we work in many settings in South Asia, Africa, and also Latin America, basically, if tenurial security is not guaranteed, which doesn't necessarily mean that you have to have a property title, although you should have a property title, and I agree with you, but a lot of farming is going on in a reasonably secure environment without formal property titles. There you can work with farmers and you can work with them to raise productivity and do the other beneficial things that we're talking about. If property rights are not there and they do give rise to eviction, then that is a problem that needs to be addressed, and I fully agree with the gentleman.
Okay. Thank you very much.